SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races, and you know Tony Black had, we discussed for quite a while that Tony was going to try to get that nice round number 5210, and technically he did get it yesterday because Collegeville Girl was all Tony. He had been prepping her since she came to the racetrack, and as I said, Tony, I don't know if you were listening, but you know if you were just in your late 50s, you probably would have come up and ridden.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I had the offer to come up, but the trainer even says, drive up with me. We're going to come up Tuesday afternoon, and we'll come back Friday night, because he's got another horse in on Friday, a horse that I had won on. But I said, I can't. How am I going to? I said, I'm not going to drive myself 5 or 6 hours each way. I said, and I can't come up on Tuesday and come back on Friday night or Saturday morning because, you know, I got other responsibilities. I just can't do it anymore. But that filly, I'll tell you one thing, Collegeville Girl, everybody in Barn 25 was happy this morning. There was a lot of music and celebration and congratulations, and it's amazing what one winner can do. But especially, you know, shipping out of Parks to Saratoga, I mean, that's no easy feat, but that filly, she lived up to all the expectations we had for her. When I started getting on her a few months ago, he says, you know, she's a New York bred. I said, oh, man. I said, I wouldn't, you know, it doesn't matter what breed she is. She can just plain run, and she's a big, good-looking filly. I don't know if you went over there to see her, Steve. And, you know, if I would have gone, one of the reasons I almost decided to come up is because I know I could be close to you for a couple days. But even with that influencing me, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. But she did everything everybody expected of her. She's a big, good-looking filly, two-year-old that's got a ton of talent and a good head. And that's a great combination. One that has talent, but then allows you as a jockey or a rider to utilize their talent efficiently and effectively. And I was proud to see how she broke, because she broke good with the field, and then she showed her natural speed. You know, it's amazing when you school these horses and two-year-olds how honest some of them can be and how they can live up to your expectations, even though, because they're just getting introduced to the game, you know, and they don't know exactly what's going on, but they're willing to do what you ask of them. But you also, you know, the gait is so important, and you can school one, and it only takes one step in the wrong direction while you're in that gait, or one move, you know, to lean one way or the other in that gait to not break like you know they can. And a good example of that was Tuesday. I rode a two-year-old, another two-year-old I've been getting on. And, you know, she's a two-year-old for Cynthia and Walter Reese. And I rode the whole family at one time or another and win stakes on one of the sisters and of this two-year-old that I rode Tuesday. And the one thing that I always say to Walter and Cynthia Reese, this family has the quickest reflexes of any horses I've been on. You know, they really leave the gate. And I schooled this filly for Walter and Cynthia out of the gate several times. And the one thing I said, I don't know where she'll finish, but I know one thing. She'll leave the gate and she'll be in front the first couple jumps. No, got left. So it's an example of it doesn't take much of any little one thing to do wrong, you know, step back in the gate just at the time they're going to spring it, or a horse rattles the gate next to you, and it distracts your horse or makes them step in the wrong direction, and they get left. But, you know, when you're riding two-year-olds and something happens and you adjust to it, like on Walter and Cynthia's horse on Tuesday, so I got left, I'm not in front, so we let her get around there, get her feet under her, and I reached and shook the stick at her, headed her in behind the dirt at the 3/8 pole, and she came running and finished third. So 2-year-olds are interesting, and so much of riding a 2-year-old is, in so many situations, you know they're going to be honest, only because they don't know exactly what's going on. But if you can give them the right trip, you know, or you can encourage them in the early stages, most of the time they'll give you a run in the latter stages of the race. Yesterday was a perfect example of one leaving the gate, you know, the way you know she can, went to the lead. Kendra Karamush rode her and had a little horse left at the head of the lane, kind of schooled the rider to the inside of him a little bit, tightened it up, and then she went on when he asked her again. So what else can you ask of a first-time starter except to pay, what, $20? Gotta love it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I did all I could on the air yesterday and brought her up on Tuesday as well, and referenced that, you know, that you had an association, and I was quite pleased. I had, especially, you know, starting that pick six sequence, and
right,
you know, it that was a field, you know, the people seem, whenever anybody comes from out of town, it's like the alarm bells. People are aghast that somebody could come up and win, you know, with seemingly with connections that are, you know, slightly obscure to them. It's just ridiculous. And that field was, I mean, let's be honest, it was just sort of a I don't want to say ragtag, but it was an undefined group. There was nobody that was necessarily touting themselves all that much in the morning. You read the Mike Welch and the team in the Clocker report. You know, there were some that had, you know, looked okay, but there was no monsters, obviously. And so, you know, it sure felt like a place where an outsider, you know, could find themselves in position to do well. And all you have to do, I mean, arguably, she was working as sharp as anybody. She had that sub 36, she had that 35 and change gate work back in May. So it was obvious that she had a first step.
Yeah, and you know what, Steve? I mean, especially because you kind of knew I got on her. There's one thing when I work horses. Yeah, I never just totally try to get to their bottom in any late stage of the work. So whatever they do, they can do more, you know. And that's a good thing because it keeps horses from getting overtrained, from getting, you know, maybe you do too much with them, and at times, you know, you get them fit. But there's a fine balance between fitness and energy level. You know, you can be super fit and have no energy to perform because, you know, you've been almost to the point of overtrained. When I get on horses, I never seem to, like, ask them to do more than what they're comfortable doing and ask them to stress and strain a little bit in the latter stages, but not get to the bottom of them. So when they go in 35 and change, they probably could have gone in 35 or 34 and change. When they go in 48, they probably could have gone in 47, 47 and change. But, it's, you know, more than just seeing one win when you have an association with one, especially for a few months, it's more than, well, they pay $20 or they, you know, they go to Saratoga and win, which is always a feat. But it's the idea, it kind of reassures oneself that, you know, kind of know what I'm doing still. Yeah, you know? I still got a feel for it. And it's very rewarding mentally. You know, mentally, the rewards in this business are sometimes more important than, and of course, I don't want to sound stupid. Yeah, of course, the monetary rewards are, you know, what everybody strives to achieve. But you know what? Mental awards have a lot of value to them, too. They really mean something.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, for Richie, give everybody an insight into his operation. I mean, he's had a steady barn full of horses for a long time and has won a lot of races.
Yeah, I've had a close association with him, rode at times more for him than at other times. But, you know, when you have a man and you look at his barn, and, you know, he has a turnover of horses every year, fresh horses and 2-year-olds. But you know what doesn't turn over in his barn that's really important? Because I've been with, you know, in that barn for many years with him, you know, the help. he's got a good nucleus of help. You know, guys that have rubbed horses for him for years, people that have worked under the shed for years. That says something for the integrity, the credibility, and the respect level that people have for him. You know, he got guys like Ricardo, been there for many, many years and go any place he runs a horse. You know, Arturo, you know, guys, he has a nucleus of grooms and help that it's very important. Because, you know, Lucas kind of, he got the idea out there to people that it's a team effort. You know, it's a team effort. And sometimes people mock that. Oh, team effort, what the hell are you talking about? The horse goes out there and does its job. You just train them, you know. But it is a team effort because when you have help that really cares about your operation and they're dependable and they're not, they also know what they're looking at when they are grooming a horse or rubbing a horse or handling a horse. You know, we got Chavo. He gets on horses every day for Richie. He's been for, he was a rider. Santiago Cruz was a rider for many years and has worked for Richie, or Cruz Santiago, we call him Chavo. He worked for Richie for many years. And when he stopped riding, he just stayed with Richie and Gallup horses and been there, I don't know how many years. He's been there more years than I've been in and out of that barn. So it says something for the help. They're good people, and they respect Richie. Richie does a good job, and he deserves the success that he's having throughout the years.
Well, you mentioned he's coming back again on Friday. Bluegrass Express is the horse tomorrow that that runs.
And, you know, he asked me about that horse. He says, I'm going to enter him at Parks if you think we should run him back long. I says, Richie, you're squeezing him if you run him long. You know, run him short. He's another New York bred. If he's on his game and runs his best race, he can probably be competitive, even though it'll probably be a price in a field like that. But when he runs his race going three-quarters of a mile, anywhere from three-quarters to seven, eight, six and a half, that's his distance. He's the kind of horse that will go long, but you're squeezing the juice out of him, and he really doesn't want to go long. You know, it just squeezes him. So the race didn't go here short, which he would have named me on, and I'd have ridden him here, the starter race, so he took him up there because it was a convenient trip to take two instead of just one. And you know what? The one thing about going to Saratoga, if you have the opportunity to stay two or three days, it's more like a working vacation than a job. So I wished I could have gone up with him. Steve, you could have had me there for two or three days. I'd have drove you crazy.
We would have made you a co-host.
I'd have drove you crazy. You'd have probably said, man, you'd have probably gone to Richie and say, listen, do me a favor, Rich, don't enter any more horses up here. Or at least don't bring that jock. but it's hard to get away. But it was a nice way to start off a three-day trip for him, and I hope Richie's enjoying it. And I'm sure he is. I think he took his son up with him, too, his son's teenage son up with him. So that's nice when dad and son can bond. And you know what? It's even nicer when you're bonding and they win a race and you get a picture in the winner's circle.
Well, Joel Rosario is going to ride. And this is an interesting – this actually is the typical New York bred allowance. I talk every Saratoga about these races, particularly going on the grass, the grass routes for state bred allowance clearance. They're invariably productive, and you get big prices in them. This is six on the main, and he tried this last year, Tony. But that came right off of his maiden win. He had won an off the turf race, and the next available opportunity was 5 weeks later up here, opening week. It might have even been opening day last year, and he got soundly beaten. I mean, he was 60-1, and he was 10th, beaten 14. He's a different horse now, and he's got a lot of seasoning, and he's turning back. And those wins, including that starter allowance that you had with him last December,
right?
That race, those two races back-to-back that he ran, one was open company allowance November 5th, and then November 2nd, either of those races would fit pretty well here, and he's 20-1. And
yeah.
If he runs back to his good races, he can at least get a piece, at the very least.
Yeah, he's the kind of horse you got to use. And one of those races where I think he finished second to a horse called Retrograde, going short, if he runs a race back like that. He actually trickled a little that day also. Made a run and trickled. You know, he bled a little bit. So he can run even a little better than that if he bleeds off, always something that can take a little bit away from the race. And then they ran him long, and he really doesn't want to go long. He'll do it because he's a willing individual that you can ride and try to squeeze a little bit, but his long races, you can almost throw them out. They're not his best races. And if he's had a chance, which he's had some time to get over those long races, he's coming back short now where he belongs. Well, short, the distance he belongs. And maybe he's freshened up enough and got over those long races and can put in a run. And like you say, if you're playing the race, throw him in there. Can't hurt you to throw him in there on a exact or whatever it is. Something.
No, he's
a trier.
There's not a ton of speed in here.
That's even better.
Yeah, he could sit behind. The horse that was outside happens to be a horse we're also familiar with, Wrong Ben, that Mark Hennig has, that we've talked about. That's a funny story, actually, Right Ben and Wrong Ben, and a horse they bought accidentally at the sale. And it was literally the wrong Here Comes Ben that they bid on, Alan Brodsky. It was a great story.
Well, I can tell you a similar story. There was a man, Stanley Jostelson, had horses with Dennis Heimer, and he bought a horse called Objen. They named it Objen, O-B-G-Y-N, and bought it at the sale. And at the time, the story is, he bid on the wrong horse, and he might have been slightly inebriated, they said, when he bid on the wrong horse, or he was not quite paying attention, let's say. It turned out to be a horse I won nothing but races on, and one of the better horses that the man owned, Objen. If you look her up, look him up. I think I even win a couple little stakes on him.
That's funny.
The wrong horse.
I will.
Steve.
That's great. There's a bunch of those kinds of stories. No doubt. Well, Tony, we'll look for Richie tomorrow, and was just delighted for him, and certainly was delighted for the people I heard from that took heed of the mention on Tuesday and Wednesday and scored. And I see you're taking these calls, so we're gonna be watching your. You're ridiculous. He just refuses to retire.
I'm kind of enjoying it like this. I guess I'm dragging it out a little bit to a ridiculous level. But we're enjoying it. And you know what? Like, I went over there, got on a couple horses this morning. I go over to the track, and if I don't want to get on one because I don't get along with it, I just say, oh, I don't want to get on that horse. Things you couldn't do all these years, you can do now. Or, yeah, I'll get on that one. So it's nice just to be able to do things at your own leisurely pace and then be associated with people that do like you, respect you, and then get on horses that you also like. So we're enjoying it, Steve. You keep up the good work. Thanks for all you do. And talk to you next go-round.
Absolutely. And Tony Black, everybody, who, for those of you that cashed on Collegeville Girl, you've got Tony, give him a nod. And give him a salute, because he had a big hand in it. Let's take a timeout here. Bottom of the hour and second half on this Thursday. Get going. We've got conversation yet with Steve Askin next, but some Del Mar conversation to have as well with Tom Quigley, hoping to get a visit in with Bob Baffert, and also with Leo Powell I want to get to. Of course, the win by Powell, who is really having a great summer. And I've been wanting to talk to Leo Powell anyway about Soifette, the timeless wonder. But now, here's a win in the Cougar 2 to further gild Powell's summer. Good start to the meet for him. It does a terrific job. And we haven't talked to him in a long time. Let's take the bottom of the hour timeout, though.
come back with Steve Haskin, and he'll reflect. We'll let Steve offer the perspective that seems like needs to be offered regarding Justify and his accomplishment in a burst of racing success that is unlike anything really that you can think of. I mean, Arrogate had, you know what, a nine month run of seven races. I put up the PPs side by side, but a little different. I mean, that was as part of a longer career arc. This one was like nothing that's come before. Steve Haskin next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Guess there's no use in hanging around. It's how they dress it through the town. I'll find a crowded avenue. Though it will be empty without you, I can't get used to losing you no matter what I try to do. Gonna spend my whole life through loving you.
We're back at the races. Steve Haskin is going to join us, and we need Steve's perspective here. I offered mine at the start of the show, and Steve certainly will write more extensively, and he already has. But Steve, a day that seemed to be in the offing, the retirement of Justify, and not a surprise and all that, but certainly certainly difficult to digest from a lot of different areas, a lot of different angles.
Well, more important, Andy Williams isn't good enough for you.
I do like Andy Williams, but you know, we like the knuckleball versions.
Well, Steve, I know you always do. Well, to answer your question, I think I said it pretty much all in my last column, knowing that this day was going to come, and very shortly. You know, after a while, you become immune to it. You know, you just become numb because you almost expect it to happen, and even if it doesn't happen, you know they're going to be gone by the end of the year anyway. So, you know, it's not like you're missing out on an entire career. You're missing out on two or three races more, which obviously everybody would like to see. But I don't see how people can get upset over it anymore because it's become such a way of life in horse racing. I mean, we see it all the time. A horse like American Pharoah, I mean, compared to some of the other three-year-olds, we've seen, you know, had an extensive campaign after that by running three whole times after that. But it's just, you know, just the way of the world now in racing. Whenever you get a Triple Crown winner, you can basically kiss him goodbye at the end of the year and just hope that he can make it to the end of the year. And unfortunately, if they come down with an injury like Justify did, then, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, you just accept it, you move on, you start looking to the next horse. But, you know, does it come as a shock? No, and what Justified did is unprecedented. To accomplish what he did in 111 days, when it took all the other Triple Crown winners an average of 10.5 months, that's how long. If you go back and look at the time a Triple Crown winner broke his maiden, or even if he made his career debut, to the time he won the Triple Crown, the lowest was Seattle Slough with 8.5 months. But it was 8.5 months up until 13, 14, 15 months. This horse did it in 111 days. To accomplish what he did. And listen, there's a reason why he made a late start in his career. And it's just a type of thing where you just look at him and say, you know, how long is it going to last? When a horse does that much in such a short period of time, you figure there's a good chance. You hope it's not. You hope he continues to go. But you know there's a pretty good chance that's going to catch up to him. So now it's a question of how is the horse going to go down in history? How is he going to be remembered? I don't know. It depends on how this generation remembers horses. They obviously remember horses a lot differently than my generation. You know, my generation, basically they ran at 2, they ran at 3, and they ran at 4. Now, if you look at a horse, you look at horses like Seattle Slough and Affirmed, let's picture that neither one of those horses ran as a four-year-old. They're not going to go down in history. There's a difference between a great horse and an all-time great. We're talking Man of War, Secretariat, Citation, Kelso, Forgo, those kind of horses, Spectacular Bit. All-time greats that are going to be in everybody's top 10, Dr. Fager, obviously. So the difference between that is longevity, where the people get to know who these horses are. So if you look at Seattle Slough and Affirmed, if they had retired at the end of their three-year-old year, they would be looked at as, you know, great horses and a Triple Crown winner, but certainly not one of the all-time greats because they stamped their all-time greatness as four-year-olds. When you look at each horse they did, because they didn't do anything after the Triple Crown. Affirmed barely won the Jim Dandy, and that was it. He went on a big losing streak after that, and Seattle Slough ran once, got murdered in the swap stakes, and then didn't run again. So who knows how they would have been remembered. But both horses came back and did incredible things at four. And that's why they're among the list of the all-time great horses. So none of these horses that we see now are going to be American Pharoah, Justified. They're going to be great horses, and they're going to be Triple Crown winners the way, you know, Omaha and Assault and those kind of horses, Gallon Fox, you know, were Triple Crown winners, even Count Fleet. Now, the difference between Count Fleet, even though he didn't run after the Belmont Stakes, Count Fleet ran 25 times in his career. He ran 16 times early on as a two-year-old. So I think basically what we have to do is appreciate what Justified did in the time he was here and not look at it as far as how history is going to treat him. Let history decide how that's, and let this generation going to decide on how to treat him in history. Right now, you just, you know, marvel at what he accomplished. And yes, it's frustrating and it's disappointing. We're not going to see him anymore because the one phrase, obviously, that's going to be attached to him is what if? What would this horse, what was he capable of? What did we see of Justify? You know what we saw? We saw the tip of the iceberg. Now, again, times have changed. Keeping a horse like this in training is precarious, and all that money waiting for them. But, again, I don't think we saw anywhere near how good Justify was. I think he would have just gotten better and better. He would have been an absolute monster four-year-old. You know, hence the what if. But racing now is filled with what ifs. You know, what if any of these horses had gone on and raced as a four-year-old, if they had not gotten hurt, or if they didn't get retired sound at the end of their three-year-old year. So, you know, you just remember the Triple Crown races and what he accomplished for as long as you remember them, as long as they stay fresh in your mind until others come along. We don't know how many Triple Crown winners we're going to have in the next 10 years, next 15 years. If we start, you know, popping Triple Crown winners every 2 or 3 years, I guess it depends on how long Bob Baffert stays in training. But if these Triple Crown winners keep, you know, coming along, then we don't know how the you know, the early ones will be remembered. You know, that 37-year gap really added a different sense of history to it, because it was such a long time in waiting, just as it was between Citation and Secretariat. It was 25 years. People thought that, oh God, this is never going to happen. And then boom, you get three in the next decade. So if we get the same thing, we're one, you know, we're almost there now already, having three in a decade. So we'll see what happens. Again, he's not going to be mentioned among the all-time greats, but it's nothing you can do about that. You just remember him and appreciate the time you had with him.
Well, even before this this circumstance that, you know, gave us the first hint that, you know, they were going to have trouble going forward, there's an odd, I think the what word did I use yesterday?
Excuse me, Steve. When that filling came back, listen, horses get fillings all the time. When they go down and then come back again, that was it. That seals his fate. And supposedly he had a, you know, soft tissue injury, it looked like, and you can't fight those things, and you can't afford to nowadays.
There's an odd either discord or I'm surprised, or I think I used the word bewildered at the divisiveness, and I guess it's because everybody, you know, from all points on the compass are using different levels or their own, you know, personal you of what and how you measure, you know, a great horse, or B, you know, a horse's accomplishments. To me, this was so unique, and that it just sort of stands alone as its own, you know, as an entity by itself. And with the benefit of some years, Steve, I think it's only going to, you know, look even more, you know, outlandish of an accomplishment.
Well, you know, I said in my last column that we cannot look at Justify the way we looked at any other horse in the past, because this horse, no matter what, will always be a pioneer, because he debunked so many, you know, myths and trends, and did things that was the context of my last column. You know, I did the whole Belmont wrap up, but in the last column, it's just basically about history. And all the things that this horse did that had never been, either had never been done before, or like one horse did it in the last 105 years. So he just piled on all these accomplishments that are so unique, and for him to do one after another like that. And I'm talking about even things that, you know, people forget about, like the fact that he ran the fastest opening fractions in history of the Kentucky Derby by the winner. People look at him and say, "Hey, you know, he only won by this, and then he won, you know, he barely won the Preakness, and then he barely, you know, he didn't ride, he didn't run a Secretariat-like procession in the Belmont Stakes." That's why we haven't seen anywhere near the best. This horse did what he had to do. But number one, if you break down each race, for him to run those fractions, with 45-1 or 45-10, 109, to run those kind of fractions in the Derby and win. I mean, those, you know, we've seen fast fractions in the Derby, and the horses that set them finished 18th or 17th or whatever. But to set those kind of fractions and win the race, that's a tremendous historical accomplishment. And then he comes back. People forget, by the way. People talk about, oh, the other one, the Preakness by a half a length. He came out of the Derby with an injury. He came out of the Derby with a foot bruise, with only 2 weeks to the Preakness. He had virtually no training going into the Preakness. So what happens? He runs head-in-head most of the way with the champion two-year-old and the Bluegrass winner, who ran a phenomenal race in the Kentucky Derby, and he gets the better of him. I hate to use the term, he runs him into the ground, because, Good Match, he still ran a good race. He was fourth, he was only beaten a length or so. But he put him away to go head and head like that. I mean, that's a tremendous accomplishment with virtually no training, no serious training in between the Derby and the Preakness. You know, and then listen, the Belmont Stakes, he did what he had to do. Go take a look at Seattle Slough's Belmont Stakes. He went out there in like 49-4 or something like that. He had the race completely wrapped up. And he wound up winning, you know, beating Run Dusty Run by what two lengths, two, three lengths, or whatever it was. Maybe it was four. But I mean, you look at his Preakness Stakes. He won the Preakness by like a length and three quarters over a 30-1 shot named Iron Constitution that really nobody really know much about. So you don't have to win these races by astronomical margins. You look at what they did accomplish in the race. And you remember, you know, we don't even know if Justify was a true, mile and a half was not his best distance. You know, I mean, basically the Scat Daddies, up until this incredible, you know, resurgence of his as a top class dirt stallion, you know, he was a grass horse, and, you know, there was doubts about whether he was a mile and a quarter horse, or whether he was going to sire a mile and a quarter horses. We don't know for sure how far Justify wanted to go, but he was never in any danger of losing.
Well, and on that topic, Steve, it, frankly, I'd love to go back and gather up all the comments before the Derby that, oh, no, Scat Daddy's going to win it a mile and a quarter. Oh, they're 0 for 68. I mean, it's amazing that all
with three starts.
With three starts. That's why I'm just... I'm just incredulous.
Gone, he single-handedly removed removed Apollo from our vocabulary. I mean, we're never going to hear the name Apollo again. I almost feel sorry for him. You know, he lived on for 136 years or whatever, and people aren't going to talk about it anymore because he did. You know, he did what. But no horse had ever done. And then and on top of that, he did something that only one horse had done in 105 years, which is to win the Derby with three lifetime starts. You know, only two horses in history have done it. One was Regret, when racing was completely different back then. A lot of times horses were making debuts in the Kentucky Derby. And you got to remember, when Regret won the Kentucky Derby was not the Kentucky Derby. Regret helped make the Kentucky Derby. You know, where owner, you know, Harry Payne Whitney came out after the race and said she's won the greatest race, and I'm satisfied. And that really helped make the Kentucky Derby. You know, those the Matt Wynn days and stuff. But you know, the Derby, people forget the Derby at one point was run after the Preakness, and there was no Triple Crown. So forgetting about that, and the other horse to do was Big Brown, who, you know, was a freaky horse who did run as a two-year-old on the grass at two turns, and was running against, you know, a fairly mediocre crop of three-year-olds. And there's another horse, Big Brown. We have no idea how good Big Brown could have been. You know, throw that debacle in the Belmont out, which was an absolute joke. People forget he came back and won the Haskell and the Mammoth Cup on the grass.
Right.
Beating top-class major, you know, grade one and grade two grass horses, and he did it gamely, refused to be beaten, refused to be passed. So we'll never find out. Remember, it was something, you know, Big Brown against Curlin was supposed to be this incredible showdown. So we'll never know how great a horse Big Brown was, but still, it was the only horse in 105 years to accomplish that, and this horse comes along and does it without having a race as a two-year-old. On top of that, and you just look at each race. He did things that horses just didn't do, and that's what he's going to be remembered and for doing that. Like I said, all you have to do is look at the other Triple Crown winners and the time it took before they got to the races to sweep the Triple Crown. It was basically close to a year. He did it in, what, was it 16 weeks, was it?
Yeah, basically 112. Yeah, 112 days. 111.
Yeah.
Who, Steve? Would you and some? I'm going to forget who. I'll check on Twitter. Who was it that asked this question? Because he had a really good question. Where is it? About a comparison of Arrogate and Justify, and which set of PPs, I suppose, which record, which career is more impressive
in the four you talk about in that four race span?
Not necessarily just limited to the four race span. I mean, because you have to put, people keep saying,
maiden and allowance races other than those four races.
Well, right, but I'm saying the maiden and allowance races, you still had to, you had to win those, and you had to overcome whatever elements that go into preparing a horse for a debut. I mean, American Pharoah beaten his debut, etc. We've seen a lot of that, but which I put the two sets of PPs together, put pictures of them up, and it's a it's a fascinating question. I mean, which I'll ask Baffert too. We'll see what he. I mean, he won't be able to.
It's you know, it's tough because you're comparing two totally different types of horses. You're talking about, you know, one horse who made his reputation in the Triple Crown, and the other horse who made his reputation actually racing against older horses.
Right.
And it was much more, you know, spread out. And the thing about him is that, you know, what do you do with his last three races? Do you ignore them? I mean, if you tack them on, you know, it just leaves a sour note on what he had accomplished. And it raises all kinds of questions. What happened to him? Was it Del Mar? Was it Dubai? What was it? I've a lot of horsemen out there that I have highly respect for says that when they watched him train, they thought he was having back issues, that it was, you know, something was wrong in the hind end. So we just don't know. But if you're just going in that four race span, I mean, obviously. Two of the races, which I thought were amazing, were obviously the Travers, which we'd never seen anything like that. That's historical in itself, to absolutely destroy a 37-year track record and demolish it like that, and to run that fast and win by that margin. And look who was behind him. I mean, you know, talking Gunrunner was, you know, those are pretty good horses in that Travers. And then to come off of that race and beat California Chrome, who, you know, at the time was gaining a reputation as really one of the great horses of the modern generation, what he accomplished at five, to run him down like that when it looked like California Chrome had that race sewn up, you know, maybe Espinoza rode a little bit too confidently in there, but whatever it is, he never looked like in the top of the stretch he was going to run down California Chrome, and he did. And then, of course, people aren't going to think too much of the Pegasus, even though we broke a track record, but it was just thrown in there. We were supposed to win. And then, of course, that Dubai World Cup, which is one of the most incredible races anybody has ever seen. You talk about leaving jaws hanging. I mean, that was amazing. So from a spectacular standpoint, Arrogate's four races were much more spectacular than Justified. But you can't compare it because, again, a lot of horses go, other than a horse like Secretariat, you know, a lot of horses, great horses, go to the Triple Crown, don't do anything spectacular. You know, listen, Affirmed had his Aladar. You know, he won the entire Triple Crown by, well, length and three quarters or something like that. Seattle Slough didn't do anything spectacular in the Triple Crown, other than Bull his way to the lead early in the Derby, but he didn't do anything spectacular in the Preakness and the Belmont. So, you know, it just depends on how you look at it. I think what's going to hurt Arrogate is those last, you know, people can't. It's going to be hard to shake those last three races. But what he did was incredible in itself.
Absolutely.
And imagine having both horses coming on the heels of American Pharoah. So, I mean, you talk about an incredible run. In fact, I wrote another column several weeks ago talking about how Bob Baffert trained, you know, possibly the greatest horse that ever lived or one of the greatest horses that ever lived. The only difference is they were in three different bodies. You know, if you combine what those three horses did, you'll get one normal career as far as number of races. You combine them, and they had all the attributes of could be the greatest horse of all time. But that's the difference now with racing, is that you have to take a composite horse because the horses just aren't running enough times to find out who they are. You know, like I said, we never would have known who Affirm really was or who Seattle Slough really was. It took a defeat. If you ask people, what was Seattle Slough's greatest performance? They're not going to say when he beat Affirmed. They're going to say when he lost to Excella in the Gold Cup. Our, certainly one of the greatest losing performances in history. So, you know, we just don't get to know these horses enough. So, you know, they're not going to be embedded in our memory the way those horses have. But that's the way the game goes. I guess the best thing we can hope for now is for a gelding to sweep the Triple Crown and do things like this.
Well, the one risk you have in that scenario is, you know, the tarnishing or the potential for, you know, for a, I mean, you can only, you know, not that Funnyside didn't go on and do some nice things, but it you know, you felt, I don't know, that's a slippery slope, the gelding.
Well, you know, times have changed so dramatically. In the past, nobody cared that much about losses. You know, nowadays,
right.
If you lose,
right.
It's the end of the world. Oh, we were on strike three. Oh, God, the value of the horse just went down $10 million. Oh, he died. We can't afford to have him lose. He can't afford to lose. I mean, you realize how many times Assault got beat? I mean, how many times Citation got beat? How many times Whirlaway got beat? I mean, nobody thinks about their losses. When you look at Forgo's career and Kelso and John Henry, the three geldings, God, look how many times their losses got beat. Does anybody bring up their losses? No, the only loss they might bring up is when Kelso got beat in nose by Gunbo in the Woodward Stakes, and only because it was such a phenomenal race. But nobody remembers Kelso's defeats. Back then, it was a different mentality. They ran in handicap races with 134, 135 pounds on there. I remember John Neighbord once said, when I talked to him about weight, John Neighbord said, well, if he gets beat, I'll get weight off next time. That was the philosophy. He gets beat, he gets beat. And you know why? Because the horses in the past, the vast majority of them were homebreds. And a lot of them were retired to the farm where they were born and raised. There was no pressure on these owners. They were sportsmen. You know, you look at the Vanderbilts and the Whitneys and the Galbots and the Phippses and, you know, and all these great Owen Widners. They had horses, by the way, and they knew where these horses were going to retire. And you have to remember, too, is that back then, the majority of horses, the vast majority of horses, were syndicated after they retired. And if they weren't, it was like, you know, a few weeks or tops a month before they retired. But now, these horses are sold, their breeding rights are sold early, you know, American Favorites was sold in January, it was 3-year-old year. You know, Secretary was an exception because they had to. I mean, they needed the money, they had to save the farm. So they had to, syndicate him for that outrageous amount of money. And he had already been a horse of the year. But here, horses are getting syndicated before they haven't proved anything. You look at American Pharoah. What did American Pharoah done in January of his 3-year-old year? Justify, you know, there's nothing announced. But, you know, we all know that you know, the deals for Justify was done a while ago. And that's what it is. You look at Bernardini. Who, God, I mean, how good could he have been as a 4-year-old? Come back and, you know, avenge his defeat to Invasor. Come back. He would have been a monster 4-year-old. But, you know, when you got Coolmore taking over these horses and Darley and offering all these big money, and they want to make stallions. But it was never that way. These horses were, you know, these horses that, you know, if you came from a big farm, that's where you retired. And horses were syndicated back then for like, a lot of them were syndicated for like 32 shares. So it's a totally different game now.
Right.
Totally different.
I also pointed out that, you know, you bring up the American Pharoah part of the equation, and there was a very different contract in place between Zayat and Coolmore in terms of incentives and in terms of running him through the end of that year. And it wasn't as if, I mean, there was certainly going to be a high, you know, a high price tag in terms of a stud fee for American Pharoah, you know, putting him into the stud business. But it wasn't as if, there was the same clamoring for a son of Pioneer of the Nile, really, as there is for a Triple Crown winning son of Scat Daddy, who left the stage at, you know, just as the height of his prowess was being appreciated and sought.
True.
I think that enters into this too. I mean, that's a, and that, and those are unforeseen circumstances.
And most of the horses in the past, by the way, they were all, you know, all blue bloods. I mean, you know, nowadays you look at how far removed, you know, Prince Quillo and Nasrula and Raisin Native are in a horse's pedigree. Back then, they were the sires or grandsires. So, I mean, you know, these horses had the classic breeding. But you got to remember, by the way, when you have a homebred, those horses are raised so much differently. They don't have to go through the rigors of the sale. The owner knows his horse from the day he's born to the day he's broken, to the day he gets his early training, to the day he gets sent off to the racetrack. They know every inch of that horse. They know his entire life. You can't say that anymore because, you know, horses go through these... there was a horse recently, I forgot who it was, who sold us a yearling for like $80,000 and wound up selling as a two-year-old for like $1 million. So, I mean, all of a sudden, these yearlings that nobody was are interested in, they find out that these horses can run a hole in the wind, and they start, you know, working in 9 seconds. You think working in 9 seconds is going to be good for a horse in the long run?
No, I agree.
For his career?
I agree.
You know, it's going to catch up to them. They can turn out to be good horses. Do you know how many trainers have told me that these sales two-year-olds that they get that work, you know, 9-3 or something like that, some ungodly numbers. These are babies with bones that haven't even grown yet to work that fast. And they said, you know, it took me 6 months to get them going again. So, I'm not in favor of two-year-old sales. I do not like two-year-old sales. I don't like what they have to do to get these horses to run so fast. And they might do good things. They might turn out to be excellent horses, but they don't last as a whole. It's, you know, it's too difficult. You're just putting too much stress on their legs. The thing is, again, looking back, there were no two-year-old sales. I mean, the yearly sales were just in their infancy. When people forget Majestic Prince, when he sold at an all-time record price of $250,000. Now, $250,000 is like a $200,000 or so below the average of the sale.
Well, of a select sale, but there's plenty of that. The commercial market discussion is really it's a backdrop or a part of the. The overall scheme, but
everything's a backdrop. You know, you're just putting the pieces together. All these things add up, and I'm not saying one's worse than the other. I'm just talking about the changes that we've seen in the sport. You know, like I said, I was weaned on homebreds. That's the way I always thought it would be done. It's economically not feasible anymore.
Steve, we have to move from the three-year-old that now literally heads to the clubhouse and turn our attention to the three-year-olds that this weekend. Let's do a quick survey of Curlin tomorrow, the Jim Dandy Saturday, and the Haskell Friday. Some thoughts.
Well, I saw Bill Mott this morning, and I asked him. I said, "Why, why the Curlin?" To me, you know, obviously, Good Magic is now taken over as the top three-year-old. So, but to me, Hofburg is right there, right behind him. I think Hofburg is a sensational horse. I think he's going to wind up doing some great things. But obviously, it's all about Hofburg, and it's zero. And I mean a big, fat zero speed in the Curlin. I don't know who's going to go to the front in that race. And, I mean, obviously, I've got a major rooting interest considering that Avian Rota bought Nicodemus from Windstar and China Horse Club, which like shocked the heck out of me. And so I watched him. Break from the gate this morning. He's a good looking horse, and he's gotten rave reviews. Windstar actually liked him quite a lot. You know, his sire Candy Ride is the leading stallion in the country. And, you know, we just have to see the class factor. You know, he looked great last time, but it was at Ellis Park. But Ellis Park produces a lot of good horses nowadays. And he's run two big races. But, you know, can he beat Hofburg? I don't think he can beat Hofburg, but he can certainly run second in the race. It's not that much in there. But I don't know. I have no clue. When they scratched the Reride from there to run him into Jim Dandy, I said, I don't know who's going in the front here. I would have thought that Hofburg and even Nicodemus, the Friedberg's horse, would have been set up better in the Jim Dandy. Because you're not meeting anybody any better than Hofburg. Basically, the horse to beat is Vino Rosso. But now you've got Reride in the race and Flame Away. So you could have a legitimate pace to run at the end. So if you're running in the Jim Dandy, basically what you have to do is outclose Vino Rosso. But in the Curlin, what you have to do is outrun Hofburg. And to me, they're two of the better three-year-olds remaining. And I don't know how many they're going to draw in the Haskell. Did they draw? They drew already, right?
They might be. That's true, eh? They might be drawing. I think they 11:30. I think 11. Yeah, 11:30. I think
11:30. But I mean, looking at the probables, I mean, I saw like 6-7 horses mentioned.
Yes.
So you got 5 horses in the Curl, and you got 5 horses in the Jim Dandy. You can have 6 or 7 for the Haskell. You got to see yourself. Where are all these horses?
Actually, at noon. But, they're noon. Facebook Live post position draw.
Oh, okay. But it's the same old faces. But everybody's going to be interested to see with Good Magic. Now, if Good Magic wins the Haskell, I don't think he's coming back in the Travers. I think they're going straight to the Pennsylvania Derby. I don't think Chad Brown wants to run him at 1.25. I don't think he thinks he's a true 1.25 horse. So I don't even think we're going to see Good Magic in the Travers. But, a horse that I would certainly look out for in the Haskell is Tenfold, who I still think is a very good horse that we haven't seen anywhere. He's still, again, one of these lightly raced horses that we haven't seen anywhere near the best of him. Very much like a Hofburg type. But I think he could be interesting. You never know what to expect from Bravazo. And I don't know how good Core Beliefs is. He just got beat last time. But he looks like a good horse that, again, he's another horse that we really haven't seen the best of. So it's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy to handicap these races. I don't think you're going to get any big prices. I think a good chance the favorites are going to win all 3 races.
Well, it's a new landscape on the 3-year-old front, Steve, and justified.
I don't know who's left to run the West Virginia Derby. Remember that? That used to be run right around the same time as the other big races.
It's on, was it a week from Saturday?
Something like that. And another thing, too, by the way,
it's the 4th. It's August 4th.
When is it?
August 4th.
Oh, August 4th. Okay. Oh, really? Okay, that's coming up. So that's another race. You talk about diluting. But since the Belmont Stakes, they've run 4 derbies. They had the Ohio Derby, the Indiana Derby, the Iowa Derby, and Los Alamitos Derby. Every one of them was a photo. So nobody's stepped up yet. No one has really stepped up as the leader of the class. I think they're all just going to keep beating each other.
I'll tell you one horse that stepped up.
When they start running against Accelerate and Pavel and Diversify and those kind of horses, if they want to go on to the Classic.
Well, you mentioned Core Beliefs, and I would offer up that a horse like Trigger Warning has stepped up. A horse that was in obscurity that is now mixing it up, with the other with the all others group.
that is out there. So you got that factor, you know, horses that are coming into the picture, you know, second half of the year.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, a lot of them are doing just that. I mean, they're just popping in, you know, at the last minute. And, you know, how good these horses are, we have no idea.
Well, High North, High North, Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, well, High North, I think we know pretty much, we know about, you know, Lone Sailor. You know, these are horses.
Axelrod?
Who?
Axelrod won the Indiana Derby.
Axelrod, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, he was a big, you know, he's been a big disappointment his last couple of races, so. I think that probably should point for the Alan Jerkins.
Well, there's enough of those actually. We got the, well, of course, that's the whole nother. That's a subplot.
you got all the horses that should have been
headed there to begin with.
Yeah. What you think is, you know who's going there, and I mean I understand their reasoning, but I'm not so sure he wouldn't have been really good in these races. You know, two turns or not, it's Frenzy Fire. I mean, I don't know where that last race came from, but if he is anywhere near that good, I'm not going to buy I'm not going to buy the two turn races. I mean, that last race was ridiculous. We got like
one turn
mile buyer or something.
It's 107.
133 and 133. A horse like that to run?
He's a
went
one
off the way he did. Where'd that come from?
It's what he wants to do. We'll see what you're going to see from Promises Fulfilled. You know, going back to three quarters
on
Saturday in the Amsterdam.
He could be dangerous.
Of course, he could be dangerous. I mean,
he's very dangerous. I mean, he's showed in the Fountain of Youth what he's capable of, and he just, you know, listen, he got caught in that ridiculous speed duel, and he just wasn't ready in his career to start going that fast, going mile and a quarter races, and but now, he's a fresher horse. I think he's come back. He's a horse who's capable of stealing any race at any time.
No doubt. It's the Amsterdam will be fun. Be adding into the field that's assembling toward the former King's Bishop, now the Alan Jerkin. Steve, let me press forward. I appreciate the extended justified thoughts and prismatic approach.
Yeah, let's just enjoy it. I mean, we can all be disappointed. There's nothing wrong with that. It's natural, but just enjoy what he did. Don't start thinking about history right now.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Time has a way of etching events into history and horses. So.
Exactly. Exactly. Steve Haskin, everybody, and Steve on hand for Saratoga endeavors. We'll talk more with Steve, both on air and in person. Let's take near the bottom of the timeout. We've got a bunch to do yet, and I don't know if we're going to be able to do it all. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.